out there with the public. I just don't. I just want to be home. It's safer. You know, you get that feeling. But I love you guys. I really do. And I want to thank all the vets, even though, and let's be honest, fellas, the war was a sham. It was a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution, where some North Vietnamese guys were supposed to come up on an American boat and bomb it out of the water, was a lie. We wanted to go in there for other reasons, nefarious reasons. They weren't the right things. But a soldier cannot complain. You can't tell the president why you're doing this. A soldier just does his or her job. And I know somebody explained that to me a long time ago. Felipe, before you start jumping up and screaming and protesting, understand what the rules of discipline are in the military. You do what you're told to do. In fact, let me tell you a story. I was at NBC. I won 2 Emmys there. I was the first Puerto Rican anchor for WNBC. And I did a story on the Marines. I was F Company, 2nd Battalion. And they told me, if you want to do a story, you're going to have to join.
And we're going to have to leave that right there. Sorry to have to interrupt Felipe's story. This was an encore presentation. The first hour, by the way, of Latin Roots. Right now at 7 a.m. here in New York. And coming up next is What's Going On? Moral Mondays with Bob Henley. Stay tuned.
Jersey, as well as the great world beyond. This is Work Bites Bob Henley at Stuff Nation, because we surely are. This is the Moral Monday Labor Radio Hour with Reverend Dr. William Barber and Bob Henley. Michael T. Haskins is our audio engineer, and Linda Perry is our executive producer. It's May 27th, 2024, Memorial Day, a national holiday. Yet across our country, this day and every other, 24/7, hundreds of thousands of EMTs and paramedics are working to save lives and deliver health care to tens of millions of Americans for whom they provide primary health care because these patients don't have regular access to a doctor. EMTs and paramedics do this life-saving and stressful work for low wages in a predatory, for-profit healthcare system that yields billions of dollars in profits while poverty has become, as Reverend Barber reminds us, the fourth leading cause of death in America, ahead of homicide, causing 800 avoidable and preventable deaths every day. Is it any wonder that our nation spends more in healthcare than any other on earth, while the poorest outcomes? This morning, our entire show is dedicated to EMS workers this first Monday after National EMS Week. America's healthcare system is itself very sick. Our EMS professionals are the very people best situated to give us an accurate diagnosis and the prescription for how we can make it less about profits and more about people. In the A Block, Reverend Barber and I will hear from FDNY Lieutenant Vincent Varialli, president of DC-37's Local 3621, which represents the FDNY EMS officers. We'll also speak with FDNY EMT Esther Ford, who is a secretary treasurer of the Vulcan Society, which in 2014 secured a $98 million settlement of a racial discrimination employment lawsuit for firefighters that did not include EMS. In the B Block panel, we'll visit again with Wendell Potter, a universal healthcare campaigner, a former top health insurance company executive turned whistleblower who's been helping to lead the national movement to create a healthcare system that puts profits over that puts people over profits. Wendell will be joined by Jen Coffey, a disabled EMS worker from Manchester, New Hampshire, and retired FDNY EMT Marianne Pizzatola, a 9/11 World Trade Center responder and president of New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees. We'll hear firsthand from this panel about the perils of for-profit Medicare Advantage insurance plans that are neither Medicare nor an advantage and now pose an existential threat to Medicare itself. We'll be right back on the other side of this from Tracy Chapman.
Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know they're talking about a revolution? It sounds like a whisper.
A whisper. It's an honor and privilege to, of course, invite Reverend Dr. William Barber, my co-host for this first segment. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning. And as you say to all the people who are listening in the States and beyond, I was thinking about that song you opened with, What's Going On, and that line that says, talk to me, listen to me. And that's exactly what we do here on this Long Monday program. You know, we've got to put a face on what's really going on and turn people's ears into eyes and turn their eyes into movement, because people don't think, they wouldn't think that EMS workers, the very people that we depend on to help us, save us in emergencies, in an emergency themselves.
Absolutely. And and to that end, we bring to the microphones Lieutenant Vinny Varialli, president of DC 37 Local 3621, that represents FDNY EMS officers, and FDNY EMT Esther Ford, a mental health response team in her day job and secretary treasurer of the Vulcan Society. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning, Esther.
Good morning.
So, Esther, boy, I just couldn't. Regina Wilson gave me your number, and we had a great pre-interview. This is Memorial Day. Of course, we honor those who have served and protected the country historically in war. I'd like us today, because we know people are listening to EMS stations around the country, if you could just recall for us who Sister Yadira Arroyo was, EMT, that was taken away from us back in 2017, because In the tragedy of her story is so much of what we need to talk about today.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to say thank you again for having me on your show today. Yadira Arroyo was such a matriarch in her station and throughout the South Bronx EMS. And she was just truly adored. She was like one of the, honestly, like one of the mentors that I honestly looked up to. When I first got on the job and I first had my initial interactions with her, beautiful woman with a great spirit and such a positive energy, regardless of what was thrown at her, she was always walking around with a smile on her face. And someone that I personally always looked up to and always cared to emulate exactly what she represented, not only in her station as a mother, and in the community as well.
And I guess what happened there was that a young man whose father had gone to a local precinct because he was not taking his psychiatric medicine, the father pled for help from the NYPD. And again, we see the linkage between the holes in our mental health system and a lack of a universal healthcare system. He ended up, I guess, carjacking the ambulance, and she fought bravely to hold on to it. And as a consequence, she herself lost her life. You just talk about the aftershock and the moral injury that has caused throughout. I guess there was a national story, international story.
100%. Yes, she was tragically killed March 17th and in 2017. And honestly, I don't even think our service, her station, or the community healed after that incident. And as we all know, shortly thereafter, we were slammed with the COVID-19 pandemic.
And so, Vinny, if you could also raise up, I guess it was Captain Allison Russo and her story. Once again, another emotional leader who lost her life, I guess, in 2022. Could you just give us so we can raise up her name and honor her family and her service?
Yes, yes, Bob. Thank you. Captain Allison Russo was working. She was a beautiful person, always a positive person, always looking to help others. And when her car was, her command car was not operational at the time, she was waiting for roadside to come and repair it. Somebody had told her that there was a person on the corner that needed medical assistance or some kind of emergency was going on. And when she went there to go look, this man who, again, didn't take his medication and was acting crazy, ran up to her and stabbed her multiple times, killing her on the street. She was by herself. And this man knew, you know, this investigation, this whole court proceeding is still going on today, but this man clearly knew what he did. After he was done doing it, and he ran away because other people started going after him, and he barricaded himself back into the house. So even though he was crazy and people say he didn't take his medication, all that, he clearly still knew what right from wrong, and took away a beautiful person from us all, a hero from the city. And that's what both of these women were, heroes who dedicated their lives to saving others. They were victims to a bad healthcare system that we have that doesn't do anything for these people that are out there that are taking drugs or having mental issues.
Bishop, this is reminiscent, I guess, of Luke, like the Good Samaritan. These people embody the best that we can hope to be. What's your reaction to hearing these testimonials?
Well, when I excuse me. Bob, one of the things that when I hear this is the sickness of how the system is broken all the way around. So on the one hand, you don't have the health care that treats people with mental illnesses. On the other hand, you have good people who are working because they have a deep heart, but they're going out. I think I heard a young man say she was by herself. That's problematic. You know, these persons should be, you know, always accompanied. Then they're by themselves, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, that they don't have the union rights, the protection, the living wages. So they're forced to go out and do one of the hardest, most dangerous jobs, hard because you're dealing with life and death situations when people call paramedics anyway, and EMT. And yet what it seems like is the society wants brothers and sisters to be there. In these situations, but in another sense, we're not there for them, and it's all correctable. It doesn't have to be. And so what happens is, rather than in these two cases working to save lives, your own life is taken. But even before the stabbing, even before the killing, their lives were at risk because they were working low-wage jobs without protections, which, you know, Bob, we've said that the truth of the matter is the Surgeon General ought to be putting on a low-wage job the same thing they put on cigarette, that is hazardous to your health because of what it does and how it damages. And, you know, lastly, you know, when I hear these stories, Bob, you know, on June 29th, we got this big mass gathering. I would love to see, and I'm going to talk to you about another massive numbers of EMT persons in their uniforms coming and speaking from the stage in front of the whole nation, because I guarantee you that the majority of Americans, when they think about poverty, they think about low wages, they think about people who sometimes can't even go to the very hospitals they take other people to, they do not have in their mind the very people that come and pick them up to save their lives. I guarantee most people don't put that together.
Exactly. So, Esther, back to you. Of course, Yadira was represented by Local 2507. And in many ways, we know that there's a major pay disparity between EMS and firefighters and cops and sanitation. Things like unlimited sick do not cover firefighters and cops enjoy that, so does sanitation. EMS does not. They are in uniform and first responders. They, of course, lose their lives in violent attacks. They paid a terrible price during COVID, of course, being on the front line, the tip of the spear, as they say. And yet, the thing you're so aware of is this moral injury of putting your life on the line for others in a system and society that doesn't have your back creates this issue of depression and moral injury and becomes a gateway to depression. And we know that suicide among your colleagues is a real problem right now. If you could connect those dots for the bishop.
Yes. Absolutely. If you think about it, just like police officers, just like firefighters, and even our brothers at sanitation, each and every one of us show up to work with a passion to help others. Everyone sat on the job with a heart to help and a willingness to do what we do, to go through training, to show up and put on that uniform with pride. And yet we're met with our subpar wages and acts to show up, smile, grit, and continue to bear with what we're given and not ask for more. Almost as to say, at least you have a job. And it's difficult because not only do our colleagues need to manage their mental health when we lose a coworker or colleague through suicide, but also the traumatic events that we endure, and we're walking into people's worst day of their lives and trying to process and do our jobs. We get our jobs done, but that injury, as they say, the body keeps score, and that is something we have to carry on with. And the resources that we have to even manage our health are not even compared to what our brothers at Fire and NYPD have too. We don't have the same resources. And
Bob, may I ask Esther a quick question?
Yeah, of course.
Esther, and by the way, it's powerful that that name Esther, you know, she was one who spoke out about the safety of her people. Now, are all of the persons, the EMTs in New York, are they your area, are they under unions? That's number one. Because what I'm thinking about too is, I know down here where I am in the South, they are not unionized. And so the situation is even exacerbated more, Bob. We think about this from a national perspective.
Right.
And have you ever had conversations, Esther, lastly, with persons who talk about, you know, going to work, putting their lives on the line to save others, and how hurtful that is as they drive and as they move to consider that I'm putting my life on the line to save others, but I don't see the society really caring about that life, my life, as it should. I've talked to people across the country who feel like oftentimes they are put in a pressurized situation of going in that kind of place, but don't feel as though, here it is, this is how they feel. They feel like they're essential workers, but then the society treats them like they're expendable.
Oh, yes. So just to answer, thank you, Reverend. Just to answer your first question. So, yes, our FDNY EMTs are covered under a local union. We're 2507. Okay. However, our 911 system here in New York City, because it is so busy, we are supplemented by hospital ambulance corporations as well. So they support us and they supplement out of private hospitals. And those members are not necessarily protected by the union. And those members sometimes even have to grit and bear with less training that we have. Their equipment sometimes isn't as well kept as ours. So they're continuously either operating with vehicles that are subpar and not ready to answer the call, but they're actually forced to be out there in these vehicles because not for nothing, but they have to keep the money wheel going, right? Then to answer a second part, we're having conversations with people about, you know, the resources for mental health. I personally have been a champion in trying to educate myself in what I can do for my colleagues outside of the work, right? And I tell my partners constantly, when I'm not wearing this uniform, I'm still working for this place because I still want to figure out what is it that I can do? What is it that I can
do? We know you are.
Yes, and thank you for honoring. I truly honor the name Esther, and I genuinely feel that from a little girl, my mom has always told me how powerful my name is, and it's something I care to live up to. But I've gone to conferences for first responders or military personnel that have passions to help with mental health. But unfortunately, I'm pretty much the only brown person in the room. And I'm given this treatment as if I'm not a patriot sometimes, or I'm not a champion that looks like has gone through similar or even a fraction of what they've gone through. You know, and I respect and honor our veterans, but being in the room with them outside of uniform is a different animal. And, you know, I hold my head up high because I know the passion that I have for this and, you know, what it is that I can bring back as resources to my friends and colleagues.
Well, and they're hearing you now loud and clear. And I guess when Esther mentioned resources, Vinnie Variali, one of the things I had the pleasure of interviewing Montclair, New Jersey EMS Chief James Mazza, who runs a very dynamic unit of 45 paid members in Montclair, New Jersey, across the Hudson. And he told me, of course, it's a patchwork across the country, as Reverend was alluding to. We really, in over 30 states, it's not even considered an essential service. And the state of New Jersey, that counts itself as a blue state, with a Democratic governor, they pay $58 to transport Medicaid folks in an emergency. That's all that they are willing to pay the Montclair ambulance, which means the minute that they roll out and touch someone who's economically challenged and on Medicaid, they have to find at least $300. So can you talk about this? I mean, you guys in the front lines of this brutality that Reverend Barber talks about is a soft violence that we see with this rationing based on money.
Yeah, that it's incredible that he had. I saw that article, and it cost them $350 every time the ambulance responds to a call, and the state of New Jersey only reimburses them $58. So you're right, Bob. They're losing money on every call and have to beg for volunteers, donations to help keep the ambulance running in New Jersey. I'd like to go back to the resources, though, back in even New York, just for a minute. We talked about that they're represented by unions. 75% of, or approximately 75% of New York City is run by FDNY EMS. 25% is run by the privates, or what we call the voluntary hospitals, voluntary private hospitals. And even the unions in the FDNY EMS, we have passed laws, civil service laws and so on, and the city has outright said they're not going to follow those laws. In fact, they've called those laws illegal laws, and they don't feel they need to follow those laws. Right now, we are trying to push more laws that would make EMS an essential service in New York and help increase the Medicaid funding to provide more money for these transports that we do so that we can pay for additional resources. Another real major problem is staffing. We are grossly understaffed in EMS. I know in my ranks, lieutenants and captains I represent, we're about 100 lieutenants short in New York City. And EMS officers, lieutenants, are the only first responders who respond to emergencies by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones. Police sergeants have a police officer as a partner. Fire lieutenants arrive with three or four firefighters with them. Even our own EMS chiefs take a driver when they respond to an emergency. Our EMS mm-hmm. lieutenants, the ones who do the bulk of the emergency runs in the supervisory capacity, are the only ones who respond by themselves. And I for over 20 years, we've been arguing and fighting with the city that this is a safety issue and that they should pay for it and we need it. They need them there. And Allison Russo was a perfect example. We've had many, many assignments where members were assaulted, beaten up, and the assaults have continued to rise, by the way. And being by yourself, look, there's no guarantee if you have somebody with you, nothing's going to happen. But it's certainly going to help have another pair of hands, another pair of eyes, somebody else who can call for help on a radio, anything. It's definitely safer than being by yourself in the middle of the night to an emergency. We don't forget, we respond not only to medical emergencies. We're responding to gunfires, shootings,
exactly.
fires, all the anything the worst in life you can imagine. We're responding to it. We're there to help it, help people, and our primary objective is to save lives. And we're doing it by ourselves, arriving on these scenes.
Well, you are not, as you can hear this morning, you are not alone. Reverend Barber, if you could bring us home in the few minutes we have left and connect as you do so powerfully, the expenditure on military, and put it in the context of what we've heard this morning from our brothers and sisters.
Well, when I hear this story, and I think about it, we're spending almost $1 trillion in military spending nationally. If we cut our military budget in half, we still have more than Iran, Iraq, North Korea, Russia, and China combined. And if we took 10 or 15% of that money, we could put it towards things like education, like health care, like this emergency work. This is a national issue. You dramatize. You all have the canaries in mind. And we need this to lift this up. Bob, on the 29th, we have the mass moral poverty march on D.C. into the polls. We need to preach from around the nation because I hear three or four levels of aloneness that is absolutely unacceptable. You know, the aloneness of being in a car in a truck, to go to a scene that may be where somebody's been shot, is having a mental breakdown. We don't put pilots in a plane by themselves. We don't put police in the cars by themselves. The aloneness of not having, in some situations, union representation. The aloneness of not being paid a living wage, so you're in that place in many ways. And then the aloneness of all the pressure that you have to face in these situations. And I think I heard Esther say, and you not only work after you work, but you take all of this pressure home. And it's really un-American in a real sense because our whole watchword supposedly for this democracy is we the people. And here you have folk who are, we expect to be there. When you call an EMT, when you call an ambulance, you're sitting there with looking at the watch bar, hoping and praying. Maybe your loved one's last chance, if they can there's somebody. And yet what we hear this morning is the very people that we expect to come. And maybe sometimes because we see the uniform, we don't think about this. Nobody's told us this. They are coming there stressed. They're coming there underpaid, underrepresented. They're coming there highly tense already. And we should decry this. But last thing I would say, Bob, to both of these brothers and sisters and to those around the nation, this is why we must put a face on poverty and low wages. We must put a face on what's really going on, because I would guarantee you that 90% of people, citizens of America, until this conversation this morning, don't even have a clue about it. They would not ever put this together, that the very people many times coming to take them to a hospital may not even be able to afford to go to that same hospital themselves. And I know that, as well read as I am, I had no clue that the city of one place pays $50 and then you have to find the $300 extra to make the transport. To both of them, thank you, but we've got to raise this in a national context. We've got to put this out there and make people see it. And finally, what we really must have on this matter also is congressional hearings and policy shifts, because this is what we're hearing this morning in the Bronx and in New York. I guarantee you is exacerbated around the country, and it must be a national issue. So thank you for raising it. Let's turn the siren and the red lights on real loud.
We'll talk to you next week, Reverend. Thank you so much. That's Dr. William Barber. Thank you so much for Vinny Varialli, FDNY EMS Lieutenant, President, DC 37, Local 3621, and FDNY EMT Esther Ford, part of the Mental Health Response to Me New Initiative, and the Secretary Treasurer of the Vulcan Society. So, thanks so much for all you do. Okay, we'll be right back after this little interlude. That's right. So we're just a month away from the June 29th Mass Poor People's and Low Workers Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio in New York and New Jersey, streaming live online at WBAI.org and across Pacifica. All of these Labor Hour shows are curated online at WorkBytes, thanks to Debbie Daughtry and Joe Maniscalco. This week's Moral Monday Labor Radio Hour is supported with a sustaining contribution from 1199 SEIU, the largest union of healthcare workers in the nation. For nearly a century, 1199 members have been at the forefront in the fight for workers' rights, racial justice, and quality care for all. We're also grateful for a sustaining contribution from 32BJ SEIU, America's largest building service union, representing more than 175,000 workers in 11 states and Washington, D.C. Organizing is 32BJ's lifeblood. Its strength comes from growing the collective. Its members say, when we fight, we win. It's just great to be joined again by Wendell Potter, universal healthcare campaigner, a former top health insurance company executive, who's been helping to lead the national movement to create a healthcare system that puts people over profits. And of course, continuing on our EMS theme of getting the back of the people that have our back, we're joined by Jen Coffey, a disabled EMS worker from Manchester, New Hampshire, and retired FDNY EMT, Marianne Pizzatola, a 9/11 World Trade Center responder and president of the New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees. We're going to hear firsthand from this panel about the perils of for-profit Medicare Advantage insurance plans that are neither Medicare nor an advantage and pose an existential threat to Medicare itself. Good morning, all.
Morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, Wendell, let's start with you. Thanks for coming. Give us a state of play. We know that you've been very supportive testifying on behalf of the New York City retirees, civil servants, who are led by Marianne Pizzatola and her organization, have been fighting to hold on to traditional Medicare. We know that when they went down to Washington, Marianne her folks were welcomed as heroes, because evidently there's a national movement. Senator Warren was there. Dozens of members of Congress were there. People with Be a Hero were concerned about the fact that now there's a tipping point. We've seen, thanks to, in some cases, bad choices by unions, like we let it all hang out here, that Medicare Advantage for-profit plan that costs taxpayers tens of billions of dollars and leads to all kinds of premature deaths because of the maze of prior authorizations. What's the situation now? Where we are now as we head into summer? What's the big picture, Wendell?
Well, first I would say that Marianne and her folks have done extraordinary work, not only in New York, but nationally in Washington, and has been, I think, a crucial element of the pushback against Medicare Advantage over the past year or so. This is something, as you know, I've been talking and writing about for several years, and we're seeing that members of Congress are finally beginning to pay attention. So is the Biden administration. So are employers and the public and the media. Just this past weekend, the New York Times published a very major piece looking at the use of something called prior authorization in Medicare Advantage plans and how these plans, these companies, including Aetna, which is the company that the city is working with, how they use prior authorization to delay and deny care. And that's at the heart of the pushback against these plans. And but it's not the only reason. But we're seeing that members of Congress are refusing to sign letters that have been generated by the industry, by insurance companies and their trade associations to get lawmakers on board with pushing Medicare Advantage down people's throats. But they're backing off from that. And we're seeing that members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are very concerned. They're holding hearings. There is legislation that addresses prior authorization, out-of-pocket expenses. The Biden administration is taking measures to crack down on the use of prior authorization. But there's a lot more work that needs to be done. There are some members of Congress that have proposed legislation that would refuse these companies to even use the name Medicare because it is so different. So there's a lot going on. There's a critical mass of opposition to Medicare Advantage, and I hope the Adams administration sees this. CVS just announced earnings earlier this month, and it was a bloodbath on Wall Street because investors thought that Aetna had paid too many Medicare Advantage claims, and it sent their stock falling like a rock. And the CEO and their CFO said that they would be slashing benefits, they'd be pulling out of some markets, and importantly, they said that they would be renegotiating or negotiating with their employer customers to reprice their Medicare Advantage plan. So you can be certain that the city of New York will be facing more difficult negotiations if this were to move forward with Aetna, because Aetna is under a lot of pressure by investors to increase profit margins. And that's exactly what they would do.
And so, Marianne Pizzutola, there's been some big developments. You all stood up and fought for this because, and you've been successful in the courts. And you, I understand you had another round of success in the courts. If you could just give us like a little bit of an update on that. I know people are really interested.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Wendell. Yes, this was actually quite an exciting week for us. This is our ninth court win. This was at the Court of Appeals level, First Department, and we received yet another unanimous decision supporting the retirees' argument that we could not be forced into a Medicare Advantage plan under the theory of promissory estoppel and detrimental reliance, that we were promised we would have traditional Medicare and a senior supplement, and that we relied on that promise and the decisions that we made in continuing work for the city. So the court affirmed that in a unanimous decision, which was just amazing, and amazing to have been granted even against the government. So we're very excited by this, and we're hoping that finally the city backs off of this really bad decision of forcing us into a Medicare Advantage plan. They've always been a choice, and they've been offered by the city for years, but they've been a choice. And that no one stopped to say, hey, listen, not everyone's doctor will take this plan, or there's riddled with prior authorizations. You might save a couple bucks by offering these plans and only this plan, but it comes at the expense of people's lives. And to me, that's not a savings.
And so, Jen Coffey, wanted to bring you into the conversation. I met you down in Washington when Be a Hero and all those folks had that great rally, I guess, last year in May. Wow, time flies when you're trying to make the world a better place. So, Jen, your story is very interesting. You are an EMT in Manchester. I guess you're also a Republican member of the legislature in New Hampshire. And so you've been like a lead campaigner against Medicare Advantage because you're in a real battle, really, for your life. Give us a little thumbnail about what you've been up against and why, like where you are now in terms of how you feel about for-profit healthcare.
Greetings, everyone. Thank you so much for bringing me on the program. It's helping me reach my goals, which is try to warn people not to sign up for Medicare Advantage. I was an EMT in Andover, New Hampshire, and I worked as a ER tech in the local emergency room. And I never imagined in a million years thought that I would be in a situation where I'm literally having to fight to stay alive, to keep my care access. I'm stuck with United Healthcare Medicare Advantage, and they require prior authorizations for everything. And regardless of what's wrong with you, they don't care. They really don't care. I went to Washington, D.C. to stand with the New York City retirees because I wanted them to have a voice that was with them, that is in the situation we're trying to prevent them from being stuck in. I have this Advantage plan. Sure, the monthly premium's lower than traditional, but I'm paying out the nose on everything else. I have multiple medications. I'm paying 100% out of pocket. Medicare Advantage won't cover. I pay $40 every time I have to see a specialist. I have complex regional pain syndrome. It's the most painful disease known to modern medicine. It's called the suicide disease by the medical community. And I have to fight to get the treatments that enable me to live my ketamine infusions. What they do with these Medicare Advantage plans is they issue a prior authorization eventually going, sure, go ahead, get the treatment. But then they go back on it as soon as it's time to pay the bill. For the last year, every single treatment I have gotten, I've had to fight for a prior authorization first, then get the treatment, and then after the fact have to fight to get them to actually pay the bill. Because if they don't, I have to. And without these treatments, I'm not going to stay on this planet. It's not going to, it's, this disease is unrelenting torture. 70% of the people with it will attempt or consider suicide. It is that bad. And yet I find myself fighting because I'm stuck on a Medicare Advantage plan. And there's something really important about this. In 90% of the states, there's only a handful this doesn't happen to. You get on a Medicare Advantage plan, you're stuck there. You can't go back to traditional Medicare because nobody will sell you a Medicare supplemental policy, because that is the one place in this country where discrimination is still allowed when it comes to pre-existing conditions to the most vulnerable of our population, the elderly and the disabled. So nobody will underwrite me. Nobody will sell me a Medicare supplemental policy. So I am trapped on Medicare Advantage. Mm. They put that number out there. Look at how many people are on it. Everybody loves Medicare Advantage. No, we don't. We're stuck. We can't get out. If I go back to traditional Medicare, I have to pay 20% of every single medical bill because I won't get a supplement. Nobody will sell me one. I tried. I had an insurance agent laugh at me. So I spent my life earning this benefit trying to save other people's lives. And now that it's my life on the line, I can't get anybody to fight for it.
Well, we're glad you joined us. Wendell, if you could, I'm just trying to figure out here, when this was, what was the origins of this Medicare Advantage snake oil? How did the snake oil salesman get into the tent?
I will first want to emphasize or reemphasize what Jen said, and I'd like for that to sink into everyone who's listening, and I wish the mayor would listen. I wish the unions that support this would listen. This is what happens to people who enroll in Medicare Advantage plans. Just imagine that you are sick as and in pain as Jen is and has been for some time, and trying to find the within you the ability to fight a big insurance company relentlessly, day in and day out. I mean, that's just hard to fathom. This began really in 2003 during the Bush administration. And Republicans were in control of Congress at that time. And private insurers were selling a forerunner of Medicare Advantage plans, but they weren't making as much money as they wanted to make. So they lobbied the White House and Congress, and they were able to help pass something called the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003. And that contains a provision that created the current Medicare Advantage program, which really enables insurance companies to make money hand over fist. And they have. They've been overpaid by taxpayers, by the federal government, to the tune of up to $140 billion a year in overpayments. This is money they're not lawfully entitled to, but they've been able to rig the system in ways that enable them to get these massive overpayments. Congress is finally beginning to crack down on that, and the Biden administration, but they have it's been a major cash cow for big insurance companies now for more than 20 years. So that's the origin of it, but it has been enormously profitable. But these companies are now seeing headwinds that are coming from Congress, from the Biden administration, from employers that are beginning to wake up and realize what these health insurance companies are doing to the health and well-being, and I'm talking about the financial well-being as well, to retirees. So that's kind of a short history right. of this program, but they have made so much money that it's scandalous.
And so, Marian Pizzutola, just to loop in, it is Memorial Day, and you are in the 9/11 World Trade Center Health Program. We know that on 9/11 and afterwards, all kinds of people, the health was forever changed. We've lost more people to the occupational exposure to the atmosphere because the EPA lied basically to the world and said that the air was safe to breathe. And subsequently, we've seen that we have tens of thousands of people signed up for the World Trade Center Health Program. I believe we've lost more firefighters than the 343 that perished in the day of the attack to these occupational issues. And I know that there's, because I've written about them when I was the chief leader, there are all kinds of civil servants who kept the city of New York running, who kept New York State running, who kept the federal government running, who may not be first responders, but there was no Zoom. Their backside was ordered back into chairs and desks that were in the zone. What's the interplay here between Medicare Advantage and the randomness of what Wendell's talked about and their circumstance? I mean, they're a big part. There are thousands of people dealing with serious cancer diagnosis that are in this category that are affected by the city's predatory decision. Am I wrong?
No, you're spot on. The World Trade Center program is suffering. It does not have a functioning network of providers, even though it's called a national provider network. There is no network. And these providers that don't exist, so obviously we cannot get care. When a 9/11 responder wants to see the doctor, we're waiting weeks to be told who we can see. And that's because the network is trying to find a doctor willing to take Sedgwick, which is the program that that was awarded the contract for the World Trade Center program, which is owned by the Carlyle Company, which is a private equity firm. Need I say more? So now, if they don't have a World Trade Center program to help get them care, they're forced to use their health insurance, which for us is the New York City Health Plan. If we were forced into a Medicare Advantage plan, we would be in the same situation that Jen is battling right now for her own life. And yet, this was not something we were promised either. So this is a really bad situation to be putting people in. Is here that the mayor at the time, Mayor Giuliani, told us all, go back to work. The air is safe. Christy Todd Whitman, the air is safe. Go back to work. Now, 20-something years later, we are all suffering from health illnesses due to the exposure of toxic cancerous chemicals. And then now you want to strip away our access to traditional Medicare and force us into a managed health care plan with prior authorizations, smaller networks, and denials of care. This makes no sense. That's inhumane.
Absolutely. So, Jen, back to you. You've become a really effective spokesperson for this. We know that because of the way that media works today and the collapse of authenticated local news, that people are inundated with these Medicare Advantage ads. There's representations made in those which are just patently false. And yet, for whatever reason, the FCC and Federal Trade Commission has not stepped up. I mean, you must be constantly, it must drive you crazy. I know you're involved with radio production. to hear all these ads. I mean, you must have had some amazing conversations with people when you try to enlighten them, because there are people that just, they sign up for it because it sounds like Joe Namath told them to. The same folks tell them to sign up for a reverse mortgage.
Seriously, shame. Shame on every single one of these people who are mostly all like actors who have endless pockets of money for themselves. They don't worry about their health care, but they're out there convincing your mom, your dad, your grandma, sign up for this plan. It's just like Medicare, but it's not. It's not. That's what they sell you on. And yeah, I mean, it's become a mission for myself to be out there as loud as I possibly can to warn people so they don't get trapped in Medicare Advantage like I am. I mean, oh, you can have free glasses. We'll buy the, we'll pay for the lenses. Oh, the lenses they'll pay for are beginner progressive lenses that you put on a kiddo when they first get them. It's not, these aren't the ones you're walking around in, okay? The narrow field of view that's allowed on these glasses is just ridiculous. And the fact that they can call that coverage is disgusting. It's literally everything they say that they'll do for you is the lowest tier possible. It's not giving you...
But the free groceries and the platinum walker, certainly you want that.
And then you get sick, and that's when Medicare Advantage really crushes your life.
Oh, you man, Jen, we got to make some parody commercials. I know it's not funny, but we've got to use every tool available.
100% we do, because then you get put in the hospital and you're looking at a $300 a night bill because your hospital bill is not covered. Why do people not cover an ambulance? Why do they not call 911 so people like Marianne and I could show up and help them? Because they're afraid of the bill. The ambulance bill is $300, $500, whatever dollars. Because
$2,400, depending on, listen, Jen, you just brought us around perfectly to the top of the program with Bishop Barber and Vinnie Variali and Esther Ford. Marianne, we're up against the clock here. We're going to turn it to pumpkins. But if you could just give us an update, what can we do to keep the fight alive?
Well, we need to stay in touch with Wendell and myself and Jen. We need to stay in touch with Be a Hero. Our organization is continuing our grassroots funding in order to fight back the city and be able to participate in these national events where our voices is hopefully being heard loud and clear that Medicare Advantage is not something people should be forced into. So I would say stay in touch with the national organization or Wendell Potter's advocacy group and listen to Jen and myself. Stay connected with us. Our website is nycretirees.org and keep the faith. I mean, I think finally people are listening.
So Wendell, coordinates for you so people get in touch? Sorry.
Yes, follow the work that we do at wendellpotter.substack.com. That's the newsletter that I publish. You'll find a lot of reporting about what's going on in New York, but also just about Medicare Advantage in general and how much of a boondoggle this is, how harmful it is to people. But also follow me on Twitter or X at Wendell Potter. And the advocacy group that Marianne was talking about is the Center for Health and Democracy. So follow our work there, please.
And Jen Coffey, how can people get in touch and support what you're doing?
Check out jencoffey.com, JenCoffey.com. Get out there, support People's Action, be a hero. These organizations are out there fighting every day, and we need you to join us.
I want to see you all June 29th down there in Washington, people. Come on now. Got to show up.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. That's it for us. Tune in tomorrow for our Tuesday edition. We'll get an update from Debbie White, RN and president of HPAE, New Jersey's largest nurses union, leading the fight for safer staffing. That's it for us. Democracy Now! Is up next. And remember, we get the world we fight for nonviolently.
Freedom highway. Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
This is Law and Disorder.
Hi, I'm Heidi Bogosian.
And I'm Michael Smith. We're here to announce the new time for our program, Law and Disorder. It'll now be every Monday at 11 a.m.
Law and Disorder exposes rampant injustices emanating from the U.S. courtrooms, boardrooms, police precincts, and more.
We interview leading experts in the law, as well as authors, activists, and academicians who are working to bring about lasting and positive social change.
We launched the show 18 years ago with the great constitutional human rights litigator, Michael Ratner. We've been reinforced by three nationally recognized attorney co-hosts.
Jim Lafferty in Los Angeles, Marjorie Cohn in San Diego, and Julie Hurwitz in Detroit.
Each week, we bring you a one-hour show interviewing legal and political leaders across the country.
Our new time will be Monday morning at 11 a.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
WBAI New York, that's where you are tuned to right now. In the center of the FM dial in New York City, 99.5. We have been here, listener-sponsored and commercially free, by the way, since 1960. That's 64 years and counting, thanks to listeners just like you. Just before Democracy Now! And before we continue with a full day of programming on this Memorial Day, some of us are here working to make sure that you have the radio that you come to depend upon. Please consider supporting this radio station, WBAI. You can visit our website. I've got to think about that. You have to visit our website, WBAI.com.